Blog Talk Radio.
Yo, it's Richie Rich from the 415, and I'm giving a shout to my people at Off the Cuff Radio, the best show out on Friday nights. Keep knocking these busters' heads off, you feel me?
Hey, yo, this is Fleetwood from the Cotton Pickers, and right now, you're tuned in to Off the Cuff Radio.
Hey, this is Anais Lauren giving a shout out to Eric King the Ruler, OTG, and the whole Guild team.
Hey, it's your Coco Filipina from NC Rap Scene and Turnt Tuesday. And I'm giving a big shout out to King Eric, Miss Chinchilla, Sandman off of Off the Cuff Radio. You are now tuned in.
Coney. It's Coney Brooks, the King of New York, and I want to give a shout-out to Off the Cuff Radio, the Gang Team, and Da Vinci Clothing for the love and support. Let's kill them in 2018, you heard?
Yo, what's hood good with it? This your boy, Big Prodigy, from the South Central Cartel. I'm just kicking back, chilling, listening to my homeboys on Off the Cuff Radio. Turn that shit up.
Society got it worse for me. It seemed like the streets the only thing that works for me. A couple pounds for a key, now that's worth to me. I'm from where niggas hustle hard to cop cars to impress bras, but lose it all when the cops come. And he involved cause of the nigga he cop from. Wearing a wiretap, yeah, they got him one. The type that'll tell on his mama to stay out of drama. Know about a murder and take him right to the burner. The type to be in the trunk shot and the car burn up. Or just the type to never turn up. It make it hard to determine cause all of the bridges you've been burning. If you keep living, then you keep learning. But it sound good the way to pass the word. It makes you sound good in this final sermon.
You know it's cold out here.
Man,
you know it's hard out here. You know it's cold out here.
I can vividly remember kissing Tiffany, and she telling me when I'm gone how much she missing me. She know I'm in the streets, so we treat every time like the last time. Fuck like it's the last time, it might be the last time we ever talk or even see each other. And I remember the last time we talked or even seen each other. And it's sad when you part on bad terms, but
I guess you live, I guess you learn. You know it's cold out here.
And we really have no control on how situations just might unfold out here. It seemed like everybody died young, and nobody gets to be old around here. Cause the old niggas smoked out, and the little niggas smoked out. Nobody got control around here. Even the police is nervous to patrol around here.
Yeah, you know it's cold out here. You know it's hard out here. You know it's cold out here.
Man,
you know it's hard out here.
Yeah. Hey, now you could do your hour for
fathers, your Hail Marys, the Reaper coming, you can't hear him cause you know it's hard out here. Hey, nigga got a squad out here, cause we go hard out here. Little nigga got the most heart out here. We gang banging like an art out here. Dope cases and gun charges out here. Killers turn rats out here. Niggas kill you for a sack out here. 500 for a Mac out here. You gotta watch your back out here. We survive against the odds out here. It's like the city of God out here. Pray to God out here. Man, it's getting cold out here.
You know it's cold out here.
Man, you know it's hard out here. You know it's cold out here.
Man,
you know it's hard out here.
It's so hard to look at me face to face. I could taste the fear in your blood. For the love of my squad, for the love of the thug, I fall till I foul out. Retaliation and revenge, yeah, that's what I'm about. We could trade war stories, we could go to war for it. Just bought automatics and bricks and C4 for it. Bodies in the storage, pussy niggas get extorted. 44, that's illegal, got about 5 bodies on it. Making my getaway, clean out that wide body foreign. Heat that thing on my way, nigga, now tell me how do you want it. I stay taunting the pigs, I stay clutching my cig. And I'm talking like a pimp, cause it's nothing you dig. I did it bigger than most niggas could ever figure me. Disrespect my grip and they can't go cripple and get him. Back against the wall, nigga, I fight harder. And I take them all with me, I'm a martyr.
I blew myself up, I'm on some harder shit. Now who you got a problem with? I blew myself up, I'm on some harder shit. Now who you got a problem with? I blew myself up, I'm on some harder shit. Now who you got a problem with? I blew myself up, I'm on some harder shit. Now who you got a problem with?
I was born for glory, my life a war story. Rebellious child, grew up amongst the gory. Haunting images of what niggas did. Blood splash on the tree of my Timberlands. All I know is violence, respect it or you check it. Done them off without a thought, that's how you send a message. Roll up, light it up, smoke them like a bomb flower. You know the time, you try me, it be your darkest hour. Show them the meaning, the power. Prodigy is criminal minded, brilliance. Genius, run all opposition through the fucking cleanest. Get washed, I'm mob, I'm a terror, a martyr, civilian nigga. I'm a high rank spitter with the rap or the strap. I'm a whale, use a kipper. Drink away my demons to proceed to sin. Infamous allegiance, the chief of my Indians.
I blew myself up, I'm on some harder shit. Now who you got a problem with? I blew myself up, I'm on some harder shit. Now who you got a problem with? I blew myself up, I'm on some harder shit. Now who you got a problem with? I blew myself up, I'm on some harder shit. Now who you got a problem with?
What's the deal, y'all? This your boy King Eric the Great, and you're now tuned at episode 210 of Off the Cuff Radio, the livest hip hop show on Friday nights, alongside my co-host T Max with the facts.
What it do? 210. We going in, man. You know what it is. VA and SC up in the place to be on a Friday night.
Yes, sir, man. Been very busy this week, man. We done knocked out 3 straight interviews within a week's time. We got the one we did with Lola Lope from Doggy's Angels. We got the one with Badass.
Yeah, man.
We got the one we completed last night with Spider Lope. which is going to be very explosive, and I'm going to leak that this Sunday. So keep your jaws wired for that one.
Definitely. I'm still keeping in the line of the West Coast with a living legend tonight. Our first guest, well, our guest tonight, actually, pretty much, if you know anything about just the street culture in general, as well as hip hop, then you know that this man is definitely, his name is Estyn Urban Lore. You know, there have been TV shows and movies based upon his character, you know, and he's definitely one of the OGs, you know, simply known as Freeway Rick Ross. And we mean the original OG, LA's very own Rick Ross.
And we have him on the line right now, man. That's a dope entrance for our guest tonight. We got you on, Freeway Rick. What's good, brother?
Man, working, man. Down in Arizona. Just finished doing a book signing at Lolo's Chicken and Waffles.
Definitely. Mr. Ross, this is T-Max from VA, man. Much love to you out west, man. I know King's chopped it up with you previously. This is my first time making your acquaintance. It's an honor and a privilege to be able to meet you, man. How you doing?
I'm well. How you, my brother?
I'm good, man. So what's been going on with you lately, man? Tell us.
Man, I had to pinch myself to make sure I ain't in heaven. Yeah, man, everything been good. You know, still pushing that book, The Ghetto Bible, Freeway Rick Ross, Untold Autobiography. So I'm in Phoenix right now. I'm going to do a 3-day book signing down here. Getting ready. We should be shooting a movie in January, February. You know, that's coming along well. The new book comes out January the 26th on my birthday. I'm also looking for people who want to throw me book signing party, birthday party for my birthday. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what city I want to launch the book in or have. We're going to do my book launch and my birthday at the same time, 26th of January. So I don't know what city I'm going to be in to launch it, but I'm looking for people who are interested in doing something with me on that. What else I'm doing, man? You know, I'm into the cannabis now. We got the cannabis cracking. We finna put our hand down on the cannabis industry. What else we got going on, man? Selling cars, doing taxes, still doing speaking engagements, doing corporate credit. You know, people who want to get their credit done, they can holler at me as well. We got the Millionaire Club that's popping, where we're going to make 250 people millionaires. Is that it, man? That sound like that might be it.
Sound like you
look,
a busy
anything
guy.
Else? Look, man, anything else that comes along in the course of this conversation, we got a couple hours to really chop it up on. So anything else? Now, you know, definitely I have to ask this. Now, it's already more or less, we already know, for those out there, our listeners out there, your history is already well documented in terms of your place in the game as one of LA's, you know, biggest kingpins at the time. And we also know, you know, at the time of the early 80s. And we also know about, you know, your subsequent incarceration and, of course, release, you know, and rehabilitation from that. And really, you know, I mean, your story is outright remarkable in terms of all that you have endured and coming out on the other side, you know, telling us the tale. You know, you have so many guys, you know, like, of course, Boy George Rivera, Felix Mitchell, you know, Alpo Martinez, you know, Rich Porter, you know, Kenneth McGriff, you know, Nicky Barnes. I mean, so many that have been out there really in the street doing what they do. And, you know, you're in that pantheon of legends, man. But but I guess the main thing is from your time, you know, doing, you know, being on vacation for so long and then getting out, and then putting, you know, having your plan together of what you wanted to do when you get out. Could you tell us about that journey in terms of really being able to set that path to prosperity that you're on so abundantly right now?
Well, you know, I spent my time incarcerated studying. I decided that I was going to turn my jail cell into a college dorm instead of a cell. And that's pretty much what I did. I started working vigorously on my plan to better myself, to better my community, and to better the world.
Right. Definitely, definitely, definitely. Like they say, you know, don't let, let the time do you. You do the time in terms of being able to, you know, of course, get better, you know, as you said, better yourself behind those walls and everything, man. I mean, but wow, I mean, just to see what you're doing right now in the book, you know, how did it come about for you to be, to add to your awesome accolades as well, author, as well as activist and speaker and such?
Well, you know, I was sitting in jail. I had a lot of time on my hands, a lot of time to think. And, you know, I saw in the paper where Tookie got nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize. And I was like, wow, unbelievable. A guy from my neighborhood, you know, got nominated for a Nobel Peace Prize for writing a book. And then it came to me that if he wrote a book on gangs, I felt that I was one of the most knowledgeable guys about drugs, cocaine in particular, at that time. And I said that, why don't I write a book about the drug business, you know, what it took for me to make it, how I did it, you know, just all the ins and outs. And I felt that if I did that, people would be interested, and it would be an educational piece where young people could pick the book up and learn from start to finish what they were getting into if they got into the drug business.
Definitely,
that's
definitely
a good thing.
You know, go ahead, King. Yeah, yeah.
Actually, that was a good thing because nobody knows the ins and outs and the good, bad, and the ugly. Everybody is pretty much looking at the game like it's painted with one brush. Like you get all the bit nice cars and the homes, but they don't know about the ugly side of this.
No doubt. And that's what I wanted to bring to the table was the whole game, you know, not bits and pieces, but, you know, letting them know that, okay, if you get in a game, you can expect this. Yeah, you might make a lot of money, but at the end of the day, these are the consequences, and this is the price that you have to pay to having that type of wealth.
Definitely. And you know, Rick, it's a very, you know, what's your, you know, like, as I said, you know, for people who really know your story, man, I mean, you know, you definitely laid the foundation in terms of really being able to give, you know, an idea to pair, you know, to use Ice Cube's, you know, song title, A Gangsta's Fairy Tale, you know, except you were really living it in real life, you know.
Right.
Could you tell us about that time in Los Angeles in the early 1980s? Because if I'm not mistaken, the FX series Snowfall is loosely based on events from your real life, you know, in terms of what it was, you know, as you actually, you know, and shout out to John Singleton, you know, for actually getting that project off the ground. Now, with that series, was that something that you were consulted on because it, or was that something that pretty much was kind of an independent operation separate from what your life was?
Well, I wouldn't give John a shout out, you know what I'm saying? I think John, he lowed me on that one. And I don't have anything to do with it, which I should have. John had read my script, and he was one of the first people to buy my book. And when I saw that he had went and got Snowflake or Fall, whatever it's called, finance, I was very disappointed with him.
Got you.
But at the end of the day, I haven't watched it. You know, I'm boycotting the show.
Okay.
Because
okay.
It's amazing to me how they'll take a fake story, and they'll put it out, but they don't want to put the real story out. I mean, if you guys are going to do a TV series, why not put out the Rick Ross story? You know, why not
right.
let the people know that this is a real story, a real guy, and it really happened, instead of taking something and making fake. But that's
right.
the way the system, that's the way the system works. You know, they never want to give us our props when we're alive. They always want to give it to us when we're dead. And, you know, that's my take on Snowfall.
Understood, absolutely. Now, in terms of, now just about your life in terms of, you know, growing up, in terms of just, you know, from being a young man, you know, how do you see today from your youth during that time to where we see a lot of youngins in the game right now? You know, of course, you know, we're all older, you know, and, you know, really looking back on the culture shift in terms of what it is from the streets and even now with internet celebrity. When you see a lot of the young people doing a lot of wild things online in terms of trying to give off this impression of being, you know, this street heavy, you know, the big baller on the block, you know, everything that entails, you know, getting it out there. How do you see that paradigm shift from when, from your time coming up to what it is now?
Well, you know, I give sympathy to young people right now because they're being fed a lot of bullshit through the media, through the music. They're being made to believe that people are things that they're not. They're being made to believe that people did things they never done, that they never tried to do. And I think that it's detrimental to our young people's health, because now our young people go out and try to imitate things that they see on TV and things that never happen, things that will never happen again. And I think that hinders them from exploring their real talents and being who they could be if they only use their imagination.
How deep of the
snowball effect do you see affecting the youth from the Reaganomics days? Because what people want to paint that picture of the damages that Reaganomics have done to the black community. Do you still feel those effects today, or do you see it?
Oh, absolutely. It's all over the place. It's running rapid in our community. But you know, at the end of the day, we have to make up our minds what it is that we want to do. Can you excuse me for 1 second?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. This is Off
the
Cuff Radio.
Call number is 619-924-0703. Off the Cuff Radio. We got Freeway Ricky Ross on the line. Chopping it up.
Sponsored by Da Vinci Clothing. Shout out to our co-hosts who are here with us in spirit, Illar the Sandman and Ms. Chinchilla. You know, while we're waiting for our guests, Mr. Ross,
I'm back.
And he's back. Just on cue. He's on cue. Yes. Go ahead, King. You had the flow with it. Go ahead, King.
We just wanted to paint that picture because they're talking about how bad it is with under the Trump regime, but we want to paint that picture back on how detrimental Reaganomics were back in that heyday and how crippling those policies that he was passing, that whole war on drugs, how that was detrimental to the black community, and does that have that effect today?
Well, you know, I think that it's hypocritical and bogus for our government to bring drugs into the country and then turn around and incarcerate the people who get involved with drugs. You know, right now we still got 600,000 black men in prison for nonviolent drug offenses. And I think Reaganomics played a terrible role on that. I don't know where Trump is going with his presidency. But at the end of the day, you know, he doesn't have our best interests at heart. I don't believe. But you know, for the most part, no president has ever really made a policy to help black people. You know, even Obama, he never directly did anything to single us out. I think that he stayed away from those issues in fear of being labeled as somebody who catered to blacks, and I don't think he did, even though, you know, blacks put him in the power, and he had an opportunity. He did do a little, you know, with the crack epidemic. I think he released 2,000 people, but you know, that's just a drop in the ocean, like one raindrop in the ocean. It was nothing that he could have done, and he could have commuted everybody who was involved with crack cocaine once they found out that it was racially motivated. He could have corrected that wrong with one swipe of the pen.
Definitely. Now, in terms of, now, Mr. Ross, in terms of the Reaganomics era, because, you know, also watching the movie American Made, you know, about Barry Seal, you know, a shout out to Tom Cruise for an epic performance in that movie. Because for those that really understand that story as well, about, you know, and it's it's all documented, as you know, on Off the Cuff Radio, we are never a ratchet outfit in terms of gossip. We're all about the real facts of what was going on during that time. And as you said, you know, basically the CIA was involved in that in terms of funding the Contras, if I'm not mistaken. Please correct me if there's any part of my you know, recollection of the facts that is remiss or renegade in their articulation. And, you know, basically, as you said, you know, that was part of the whole quote-unquote war on drugs, which was really disenfranchising a lot of black and brown individuals because, you know, of course, when crack hit in the 80s, you know, our communities were the ones that were directly affected from it. But as you said, the hypocrisy of it was that yet and still, you know, they were being trafficked in, you know, but, you know, like what did Razzcast say, you know, in Miami Life, you know, no government permission, no DEA intervention, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And to see how, you know, it has decimated the community, you know, but yet and still you want to lock up the people that you basically, you know, that, you know, it was basically supplied to, you know, who really for more or less were trying to just survive in the street, you know, speak to a bigger issue in terms of the economic policies in reference to, as you said earlier, about how they were not favorable towards us in terms of really being able to, you know, they in terms of helping the inner city really come out of it. And also I wanted to touch on another level, too, in reference to politics with our, you know, current president. And how some rappers, and I guess you know where I'm going with this, well, some artists, whomever, have decided that they want to speak their mind on politics, not, number one, having an authentic understanding of the politics they're trying to speak on, and two, not having the real experience of the street to really understand it as well. We're not going to say no names, but our listeners out there know. And what is your opinion of those people who try to pontificate on a subject that they may not necessarily be scholarly in?
Well, you know, anytime you're speaking on something that you don't have the knowledge and the background to speak on, it makes you look foolish.
Right.
So I would suggest anytime that I'm speaking, I'm speaking out of either experience or something that I got from somebody that was experienced in doing it. And I would encourage anybody before they speak to always think about what they're saying, because once you let it out, you can't take it back. And I hope that that all our people learn to think before they speak.
Especially in this day and age where anything you say on the internet will never leave.
Ain't that the truth?
Yeah.
Now,
so when
you know,
and when writing your book, like, do you have any other books that some of, like, were your favorite books to read? Like, are you like avid reader, like, a biographies and strategy books and stuff like that? Do those type of books
influence
you on how you try to move?
I read over 300 books before I left prison, and there's three books that stood out the most to me. And that's Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill, As a Man Think or Woman Think by James Allen, and The Richest Man in Babylon by George Clasie. Those books really helped me mold my plan that I'm working right now.
Man, that's amazing, man. And, you know, Mr. Ross, you know, also, too, you know, a good friend of mine as well, Sean Hartwell, if you're familiar with him, you know, from New Jersey, he also had the same trajectory that you did in terms of really being out there on the street, you know, pumping and then doing 20 years and then coming out and becoming a successful entrepreneur in terms of being one of the premier party promoters, you know, in New Jersey, owning his own club as well, you know, and if not that, you know, promoting heavily another club. So I guess we want our listeners to know that no matter the circumstances of your life, no matter, you know, the convictions of what you may have been imprisoned on, you can always come out. Your mind may be locked up, your body may be locked up, but your mind is still capable of making marvelous moves upon release, you know. And, you know, it is, you know, and shout out to you in terms, and you of so many others who decided that coming out, you wanted to make a positive impact on the community. And, I mean, how does it feel to be so revered upon your release? I mean, one of the videos that always stands out to me is, of course, Mac Lucci, Cali Life, where you're in that scene in the car sitting with him, man. And that's just one video of many that you've been in. How does it feel to still garner so much respect to this day?
Well, you know, respect is something that has to be earned. And I work hard to get the respect that I get. And I marvel, you know, I love it. And I'll keep working to get to that point. And that's one of the reasons I started my Millionaires Club. You know, I got a club now where I'm getting ready to teach 250 people how to become millionaires. And that's only to gain the respect, because I believe, you know, when people get rich, they hoard it for themselves instead of sharing it with other people. And I want to be the one that they say, man, Rick made 1,000 people millionaires, or 10,000 people millionaires from his teaching.
Man, that's what it's up. And as we say, it's called paying it forward and bringing down that hand to lift others up. You know, now in terms of what it is, in terms of the street life, you know, in terms of, because you actually lived it. In terms of the seduction of the cars, the women, the money, the opulence, you know, the perceived respect of it, you know, you saw the good and the bad of it. And I wanted to touch back on that about what you said earlier, because there is a view of what people have with the romanticized and the exaggerated, but not the real and the authentic of it. You know, from, and obviously, with you being an author now, you're able to articulate, you know, we know game is to be sold, not to be told, but if you could just give us a tidbit in terms of the maturation, you know, the makings of the man and the evolution of where you came to where you got to this day in terms of really seeing everything. Was there a point along the way where you realized, like, you know, wow, this is like really some dangerous shit that I'm involved in terms of, you know, what I thought it was and then what it actually is?
Well, you know, it didn't really hit me until after I was sitting in prison and I started to look back over my life that I realized that I was, it wasn't a game at all that I was doing. It was serious. And I just started to learn the seriousness of it. And it was something like this here, you know, I was thinking to myself, why was you getting up every morning putting a pistol in your pocket? What was the purpose?
Right.
Why were you wearing a bulletproof vest? And what came to me was that at any day, somebody might try to kill me or rob me. And if somebody tried to rob me, that automatically put my life in danger. So I had to be ready
right.
to defend myself at all costs, meaning I may have to kill somebody. And
right.
I had a bulletproof vest on for in case they got to jump on me and they didn't know I had a vest on, that I still may be able to get them in the end. And when I
right.
started realizing this, and, you know, I was in jail one time with a guy that was accused of a rock house robbery, where when he went into the house, he killed everybody in the house. So
whoa.
That those type of things took place, and that I was not only put my life at risk, but my whole family.
That's real, dog. And it's like, you know, a lot of people, you know, you know, and for you and for us to have this sit down to really, really, really talk about it, you know, we pull no punches, and we're always going to tell the real, man, because a lot of times, you know, because I know, you know, I know you saw Paid in Full and you saw how that whole situation turned out in the end, you know, where, you know, Alpo snitched out everybody after shit got real for him. You know, of course, everybody knows, and that's the only part of the story. Because there's also the other half of it that was spoken on Raful Edmond. And, of course, you know, his hitman, Wayne Perry. And you know about that story as well. You know.
Yeah, I knew Raful.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And, you know, and you just – and it just how, you know, when that whole situation came down, how a lot of people, you know, basically, you know, went down with it. But, you know – but during the time that Raful was on the street, man, it's like, you know, Wayne was basically the nigga who was handling shit for him when people got out of line, you know, and, Wayne, as he was known as Silk, you know, he was ruthless, man. If you crossed him or Raful, you were going to be dealt with, you know, and I think a lot of heads getting out there in the street don't really understand
don't
the implications
that goes on. That's
exactly.
why it's important to have guys like Rick on the show to let people know that it was like the Wild Wild West out there. It wasn't just like some. It wasn't like Grand Theft Auto. Your life
exactly.
was on the table. Your life was on the line 24/7.
Definitely.
No
now,
doubt.
In terms of the hip. Oh, go ahead.
I'm going to have about 5 more minutes, and I got to get to my next event.
Oh, okay. Well, I guess closing it out, we want to ask you, in terms of your, in terms of the interactions with a lot of the West Coast artists out there, you know, and of course, man, oh, my God, is there such a ton of talent coming on out West, man? I mean, you know, Cam in China, you know, Steve Lacy, you know, shout out to Compton AV. You know, shout out to Mitchie Slick, you know.
I was going
to
ask him, too, about his nephew, Slim the Mobster. We played 2 songs of him. Like,
yeah.
How are you doing?
Oh, word.
Slim's
I didn't know Slim was your nephew, man. Yeah, go ahead, please.
Yeah, Slim's back in prison. You know, Slim
is
living that life, man. You know, a lot of them dudes rap about it, but Slim really lived that life, you know. He was caught with a pistol a couple months back. I think he got like 3 more months, and he'll be back out, though.
All right. Look, we would love to have him on the show as well if you can make that happen for us. We would love to, you know,
oh,
talk
no
to
doubt.
Him.
No doubt.
Yeah.
No doubt. Hit me in like 3 or 4 months and I'll put that together for you.
Definitely. You know we're going to be in touch.
I know he has a lot of interesting stories to tell. And plus, he's really dope, man. Like, I was already listening to him today. It's just funny how that connection happened and we have you on the show. I didn't even know you two was related until today.
Yeah.
I didn't know it at all.
Well, you know, he was supposed to be the next one up out of Interscope, and something happened over there that got him boosted out. But, yeah, he's still doing his thing.
Definitely, definitely. You know, look, Free Slim.
Him and 50 got into it, too, so that could have been the problem as well. I'm not for sure, but...
oh, Lord. Ooh.
Something happened you know, he was no longer one over at Interscope.
Well, you know. Oh, go ahead, King.
Yeah, God, I know he has to be out shortly, man. So we're gonna end this part of the show on that note. Like, do you have any shout outs you want to give out or let people know where to find you?
Yeah. Y'all can get me on social media at Freeway Ricky, Twitter, Instagram, Freeway Rick Ross on Facebook. You can go to my website, freewayrickyross.com. Order your book, order your t-shirts. I got some new sweatshirts that's out. I only got a few left. So if you're interested, hit me up on there. Also, if you want to know about the Freeway Millionaires Club, hit me up on my social media, and we'll make that happen. Thank y'all.
Definitely, man. Peace. And thank you again.
There you go. A big shout out to Fleetwood for making this happen.
Man, yes.
We have Ricky Ross in the building with us.
Man, King, that was like, a little over 30 minutes, and we got like a whole bunch of game involved, a whole bunch of game from that, man, in terms of what it was really like. And that's what really makes our show, you know, I mean, that's what makes Off the Cuff Radio, you know, the guillotine what it is, man, because, you know, of course, we know about Snowfall on FX. I did not know that, you know, that he was not consulted about, you know, that, you know, about that whole situation with that show.
Yeah, it goes to show you that there's a lot of shadiness with Monster Business that we really don't know about until you talk to the sources of whom involved. I didn't even know that myself, because I was thinking they would at least, if they're going to use his story or use a piece of his story, they was going to at least compensate him or credit him. John has some explaining to do. I mean, he's looking kind of funny style out there, John. I mean, first with the Tupac movie, and now this. We might have to get him on the show to explain himself.
Hey, man, we look.
Ain't Billy
and
John.
I mean, you
got to give. You ain't give us nothing since Baby Boy, and you could. So.
But, you know, it's funny, though, King, because when you're dealing with, you know, when you're dealing with entertainment, you know, the reality is, just from a business perspective, there is always the arrangements that have to go into, you know, how much they really, really, really want to put out there, you know, and that was one thing about it in terms of talking, you know, to Mr. Ross about the story, about his life, man, because the fact is, it wasn't until about a little over 20 years ago that it was actually really uncovered about the CIA. And we can say this on the air, you know, because this is true. You know, it really did happen in terms of the financing, you know, with the Contras.
Yeah.
You know, this really did happen. You know, it was something that was not known about. And, you know, of course, you know, that, you know, for those that, you know his story, if not, get out there and read, you know, read to our audience, because then you will really, really, really begin to see, you know, how he became involved with what he was doing, you know. But I mean, when you actually, you know, they can give you kind of a softer version. They can give you the truth, but it's going to be the soft truth as opposed to the hard reality, because I think it speaks to a lot of times the power players, the lawmakers in Washington and in government in general, how things go on. You know what I'm saying?
That's a fact, brother. And to leave it at that, if anybody want to ask us questions about the show,
Well, about happened just having Freeway Rick on. Call number is 1-619-924-0703. We're live to chop it up with everything. We got a lot. We got some, a few things we're going to discuss with 45 minutes left. My dumb ass, by mistake, set it up for 10:30 instead of 11. So we just got to ride this to 10:30.
It's all
been having a lot
man.
Going
Look,
on.
You know how we do, man. So what's next up on the agenda, man? So what,
well, the biggest
what
news of the day, Christmas is not coming for Treyway. They're gone. Them niggas is fired. Tekashi 6ix9ine, this is the big news of the week right here. Tekashi 6ix9ine announced yesterday that he was firing Treyway, his whole security team, his whole management staff. I'm just going to let you go ahead and just put it in his words. This is Tekashi 6ix9ine speaking on canceling his tour and firing his manager and his team.
Oh, Lord.
On the audio right
King, we got sound clips of this. Oh, shit. Okay,
yes,
go ahead, dog. Play it.
Hold on. What's... Yeah. Hold on 1 second. Let me get the volume together.
Take your time, dog.
Hold on. Here we go. Right here.
What's up, everybody?
Okay.
So I'm letting everybody know that I canceled my whole tour. The American dates is not happening. It's not going down. Austin, Texas, I think I was supposed to be there today. I'm not going to there. I spoke to the promoters, Jose Avila, with Avila Music. We are going to be in business. I am coming back to Austin, Texas. I fired everybody in my team. I got no manager. I got no booking agent, no PR, no publisher. I don't got nobody on my team. It's just me. I want everybody to know if you're booking shows, do not book shows unless I say, this show is going to be booked with this person. They will steal your money. They're not me. I'm not signing no fucking contracts. That don't got nothing to do with me. Whoever is booking shows for Tekashi 6ix9ine is stealing your fucking money. So if you need shows, I will let people know that I'm booking shows. Or if you're not on the phone with me, do not book that show because it's not me. I fired everybody. I don't give a fuck who you used to see me with. They no longer around. It's a fucking dub. November 23rd, the album drops.
There he is.
In the words of Ace Ventura, all righty then. Okay, now King, now in reference to all of this, because, you know, obviously, I think this goes beyond publicity stunts. I mean, and even for all the ratchet fuckery that this dude has done, that has been well documented, he really sounded like he was dead on about serious about this whole situation of his current business matters. I mean, You know, young boy right now, he's basically, in his words, he's doing it himself. I mean, do you really think that, and knowing how cutthroat that business is in general, do you really, really think that he can handle that by himself in terms of really being able to do all of this?
And two, he was on the Breakfast Club today, and he spoke more about the post, and he was saying that without Treyway, I mean, without him, there is no Treyway. So it got to that point. He said he wants them niggas out of his life. It's a dub deal. So that means right there, Christmas is not coming for that new. Christmas is not coming for him now.
Santa ain't got that. Santa ain't got
all
that
them jump offs they
PS4.
Had on the payroll. All that that PS4, that some luxury cars. All that got to go back, homie. Them niggas got to get a job.
Well, you know, it's funny, man, because, you know, we always talk on the show about, you know, what goes on in reference to, you know, the business aspect and how, you know, because as you called it earlier, you know, you said this could eventually happen because of the way you were almost clairvoyant in terms of how you saw this coming up to where it eventually there was going to be some type of issue. Be known to us how it was going to ultimately manifest itself. So now, you know, of course, Tekashi says that they were stealing his money, you know, that the business was not being taken care of. But as we've always preached on our show as well, you know, this is one of the requisite requirements you have going into the business. Understand what you're signing and who you have around you.
And plus, in order to get around and do tours, he had to have the Treyway to secure him. Meaning with this scenario here, let me get my thoughts together, because I called this
go
months
ahead.
Ago.
Take your time.
I just got to get my thoughts
right.
together on how to really present this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now. With this scenario here, it was also a situation where we're talking basically extortion here, pretty much. Everybody knew from the guy he was paying all these sets to get around in, and he was paying shoddy them. That's that goon money right there.
Right.
And so what they did, what he did, he needed to use them for a rep. Because you know that you look at his first videos, he didn't have none of this stuff. It was more like weird, demonic, rock, rap, anime type stuff. If you look at his early videos before he became the Tekashi today. So he signed
right.
his deal with WMG. He gets a whole new makeover. All of a sudden, he's claiming blood. He get the Jeff Hardy hairdo. Then he got all these blood sets. Treyway. It's like a whole new gimmick, like a wrestling gimmick. And it's
right.
popping off.
Stick. Right.
And they were like, and then in return, these guys here, the Treyway guys, they looking for an opportunity to get into the game. But they don't really have the talent or they don't really have the connections. So they figure, hey, we're going to give you this guy. Tekashi 6ix9ine for protection. You protect this guy. You give him your street credibility. You give him your rep. Have him rep your set. In exchange, you get a big bag. And that's what's been going
right.
on for the past year. Dan, you, of course, you know Academics. Academics is in it, too. Jerry the Mouse is into it, too, because he's the one covering these guys.
Those guys.
So.
And the words are talking about, yeah, those guys.
So, to build his rep, have him go mouthing off on everybody, and then you had Treyway having his back, Shoddy, that's his manager.
Mm-hmm.
And to this credit, he actually had a lot of hit records, quote unquote 11-11. And then to build his gimmick up more, even more, called himself the new Death Row, but that crumbled faster than Death Row. Didn't it?
Look, even
Jesus
Death Row.
Christ, it wasn't even
more.
5 months.
And Death Row was rolling strong for like, what, a good 4 years, 4 or 5 years before, you know, that situation started happening. But, you know, it's funny because, you know, as you said, man, this is all about having, you know, a situation where, you know, it's not about, you know, a lot of ratchet ass shit in terms of gimmicks. And just being reckless out there. You know, we're laughing and joking about it right now, but the reality of the situation for him right now is this. You know, he's literally...
This is where the real deal happens. This is where the real deal is going
right.
to happen now, because now he doesn't have those guys watching his back. Now he's going to have to go and do tours, unless he has that Donald Trump security. He's going to get hell everywhere he goes. Like, he already made it bad in Texas, where, you know, the Rap-A-Lot guys is waiting. Then he made it bad in L.A., of course, when he messing, you know, calling out the treetops. He got it bad in his own city. I mean, the guy ain't safe anywhere.
You know, and the thing is, most importantly, King, is, it's like you said, you know, Treyway and them were his 24-hour, you know, day-to-day people. So now the question is, and you figure to a degree that, you know, when you have your handlers, your managers, even your security to some degree, they're taking care financially of what is going, if not financially, you know, security-wise, they're handling, in terms of all affairs pertaining to you, that's why you have your team that is assigned, designated certain duties to take care of what needs to be taken care of. Obviously, with the present course and matter of this situation now, this is totally gone in another direction because I guess the question, you know, I guess the thing is, how much money does he actually have for himself?
Exactly.
You know,
and that goon money, that starts to run low. Now, I don't know his deal personally, but you could automatically assume that the higher-ups invested in this kid. That's why he's able to get slaps in the wrist on all these charges and settlements and all these court fees. Because when you got the higher-ups watching your back, they could pretty much give you slaps on the wrist because they see you as a bankable brand.
That's true.
If he was Fetty Wap, he would have been thrown under the prison cell.
Well, you know, it's funny, though, because when you look at it with Fetty Wap, you know, and much respect to Fetty, you know, the thing is what happens when ultimately, because you figure Fetty dropped his album, what, 3 years ago, and he really hasn't had a follow-up since then, you
and
know.
And I mentioned Fetty Wap,
like,
because Fetty Wap is with Treyway.
Right, you know, so the thing is, and I just said that to illustrate, you know, what happens, you know, when if you don't have that team behind you or, you know, you just haven't really dropped a song that has really caught on with the public, you know? So the thing is, what's next? You know, if Fetty ain't even got those problems with people out there that we know of, but if Fetty hasn't been out in a minute, and if he comes back, what's he going to have in terms of will the public receive him when he comes back?
And not to mention new Death Row my ass, because at least with Death Row you can actually know who was a part of Death Row and had success. The Dog Pound, Nate Dogg, Lady of Rage, those guys end up being household names. Nobody could name even three people, as Tekashi said on the Breakfast Club. He said he was gonna give anybody $100 they could name any hot artist on Treyway. So I'm like, oh, okay, it then got serious.
Oh Lord,
it then
they
got
went
serious.
There. Like, what's your roster? They done went there. The question of who's hot and who's hot on the current team, huh?
And he didn't take it there, so it's like this thing is done.
But I think that's something. This is a lesson for a lot of our, you know, for a lot of our listeners out there, younger and older, about how fast the game can change up on you. You know, in terms of where you have to have something that really all your arrangements are in place, because just being an artist in general, you know, no matter what we feel about what Tekashi was doing in terms of his music or his antics, he had a hell of a good year run in terms of really, you know, kind of making moves out there. You know, I mean, he had his name out there, and because of that, you know, he was able to live the rock star lifestyle. But that rug, look, you can make a mistake slipping on the banana peel from being careless, or you can have that rug pulled out under you from arrogance. And it looked like a little bit of both in this situation. And that could happen to any artist out there in terms of always be prepared. I never forget this. I read in the Source magazine years ago about Master P, you know, when this is during the time that Master P, you know, was really big. But he said, you know, but they asked him about, you know, in case the tank starts slowing down. And P was like, I always prepare for downtime, you know, but everything I have that I own, you know, everything that I have, the cars, the jewelry, I own it. He's like, and if I go broke, you know, I'll trade all that shit in and start all over again, you know. So you got to be prepared for when that change comes.
Yeah.
If it comes.
That's some real talk right there. And going to this segment here. This is the segment here where we got to give somebody the guillotine. It's been a minute. And, you know, I'm an NBA head as well. So I got to go to this route here. And I want to give this guillotine to – I might even not even give him the guillotine. I might just give him the Larry Holmes Award. And that's to Carmelo Anthony, my nigga. It's long overdue.
Oh, Lord.
Get the sword ready.
Oh, Lord. Yeah, we still got 30 minutes, man, so we're going to talk sports.
Like,
there's a sports section. Like,
whew. Let me go ahead and start this here. Now, number one, how are you going to be Larry Holmes status at the age of 34? And keep in mind, out of all this class from 2003, a lot of people have Melo hyped up to be among next to LeBron.
Of course, Dwayne Wade was in that class too.
Yeah, Dwayne Wade, Chris Bosh, Chris Paul. Man, that was a crazy class right there if you really think about it. Damn.
Yeah.
But I believe his best shot was
when he was with the Nuggets. That was the best shot he had to get in the ring. I mean, yeah, even though it would say that George Karl was the problem, if you really look at now, if you look at his track record, you're starting to see now that the problem is him.
Right.
It's always an issue. And it's also a case of where, sadly, what Allen Iverson doing the same. Like, you know, you're going off your name, but you're not bringing nothing to the table.
Well, there's a lot of issues.
Rockets,
and once you actually go ahead, Kane, because I'll say it after you're done. Go ahead.
And first of all, it's just like he has the skill set, but he ain't got the heart. And he don't have the discipline. Like, he feels that because he's the star, he should still be the man. When in most cases, that you got to step aside and let these young bulls run. You might have to come off the bench. Like, you got to humble yourself. And I think it's also between that and him missing the boat on not going to a winning squad. Instead, he wanted to settle for the bag with the Knicks. He had an opportunity in, like, 2008, 2009 to jump to a winning squad and build off that, but he followed the bag, went to New York, didn't produce a damn thing, and basically killed New York basketball.
I mean, look, that's when Jeremy Lin came in during the time, you know, when Melo got hurt, and Lin was having a hell of that run. You know, shout out to Jeremy Lin, you know, the Asian sensation, you know, because he was really, really, really killing it for that time in New York, you know, and when Carmelo's out, I mean, but, you know, they even, you know, when he got back, they played, but it's like the, you know, but what Lin did for that short time that he was there, you know, he really electrified that team, and when Melo was back in the lineup, it kind of dropped off. I'll get more into it after you officially get that chop. Right.
Because you notice this, every team this guy goes to, it just goes to shit. I mean, look at the track record. Like, the Knicks, when they was rebuilt, they was basically rebuilding the team around Amari Stoudemire. They was actually doing good.
Right.
Because Stoudemire was a big man, and New York has always been the type of team to always be around, being a team being having the rough edges. Like, that could have been their version of Patrick Ewing and, you know, and building some more rough characters around him. Melo comes in, just fucks up the whole hit chemistry altogether. Like, they want to become more of a scoring team. Nick, if you think of New York basketball, you think of in-your-face, smash-mouth, no fucks given. Melo comes turns the team into a fundamental team. And them niggas can't even sniff the playoffs, let alone a championship.
Well, also, too, that there have been issues about Carmelo, you know, is that also there's the thing about he's not enthusiastic about playing defense, and there have been sometimes, you know, questions about his conditioning. Now, the shit that happened towards the end of New York, of course, with what happened with what Phil Jackson did in terms of how Jackson was kind of taking shots at him. I'm a diehard Bulls fan, and I didn't think that was respectful how Phil handled that, because if there's an issue, you and that player talk behind closed doors about what those problems are, but you do not air no man out publicly. Because after you officially give the chop, I want to touch on that Kevin Durant, you know, Draymond Green situation in Golden State as well.
Yeah, we need to get Kevin Durant bitch ass to deal a team anyway, just for ruining the competition aspect of the league. But we're gonna get on that after we get on Melo. After we get on Melo, then we're gonna get on that, because he ruined Knick basketball to me. I say it, and they won't Starberry, because Starberry left and went to China. He ruined it.
Well, the thing is with Stephon, as great a player as Stephon was, Stephon kind of came to the point with this. He kind of knew that he was not being correct in his shit, because Stephon, for a lot of years, you know, and no disrespect to our, you know, East Coast, you know, New York listeners, you know, Jersey, Philly, you know, NY. There's always been a reputation that New York players, you know, from playground to pros, that they've always carried that arrogant aspect of superiority on the court. And when you watch Stephon at Lincoln High School back in the day, you know, from his high school years, I did, you know, we're not that far apart in age. Stephon was a motherfucking monster. I mean, there is no
Georgia Tech days.
No exaggeration.
Yeah, he was nice.
And he's, yeah, and especially going to Georgia Tech, I mean, he was the epitome of Brooklyn balling at its best. But when you look at what happened in the situation with Minnesota with Kevin Garnett, and a lot of people say this is where the funk started to flow in the bad way, was when Kevin got that, you know, then record $125 million extension with the Wolves. And there was a word that Stephon was jealous of KG for getting that money. And that led to a lot of friction that would ultimately, you know, that ultimately got him traded, you know, to, you know, the New Jersey Nets, where he was balling. But also, too, there was, and I never forget this shit, when he got traded to the Suns. I think it was Kerry Kittles or one of the players they asked, and they asked, what's the difference between playing with Jason Kidd? Because Jason Kidd is one of the greatest guards ever, you know, hands down. So they asked him what it was like. I'll just say a Nets player. I don't want to say Kerry Kittles. I don't want to put him out there like that. But I do remember this distinctly. God strike me down if I'm lying. But when they asked the player, what's the difference between playing with Steph and Jason? And they were like, Jason doesn't forget about you. And what he meant by that was, if you miss a shot, if Steph passed the ball to you, Steph wouldn't pass the ball to you the rest of the game. You could miss 10 shots in a game with Jason, and if Jason sees you open, he's going to pass you the ball if you're open.
Facts. Jason Kidd was very nice.
Man, that dude's vision and his handles, I mean, was unbelievable. And, you know, he wasn't the greatest shooter coming out of California, you know, where he went to school, you know, California, you know, Berkeley. But he was a hell of a, oh, my God. I mean, you know, I watched him, you know, back in the day on ESPN Super Tuesday, you know, college basketball, all that shit, man. That dude was just him and Lamar Murray, you know, Randy Duck. I mean, those guys were some ballers on that squad, man.
But I think, going back to Melo, I'm thinking this was broken. I think this was broke his spirit right here. This is my mental intuition. You know where I'm going. The minute he saw
Lala
getting blown out in power, that messed with that nigga's soul. Game over. Game over. Capiche. He couldn't do nothing about it.
Lala had other. Oof.
Yes. That would mess me up, too. I mean, shit. That nigga couldn't even feel
Shout
focused on practice that day.
Man. Ooh, I mean, Lala body was just, oh my goodness. Oof. Yeah.
That messed with his conscience. He ain't been the same since. So now is the results now is that they're talking about either trading him or getting
Buying
rid of him. I don't know. And I'll say this, though. If he's trying to leave, maybe LeBron will pick him up, dust him off a little bit, and make him a better player. Because for a man to demand so much money and provide so little results, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. So we're going to cut that nigga headband off his head.
Well, you know, the funny thing, though, is
it had to be done.
Well, you know, and I get, you know, and the funny thing about it is, though, is that when you look at what happened with Golden State over, you know, this, you know, past, you know, spring, you know, with the playoffs and how the Rockets were, I take that back because he wasn't on the Rockets then, you know, but when you look at it, you would have expected a situation with the Rockets getting him that he was going to be that punch that was going to get them over the top. You know, and it didn't happen. You know, I mean, the Rockets have been struggling. you know, James Harden, great player, but once again, he doesn't play defense either. You know,
he was getting smoked.
Yeah.
He was getting smoked in the playoffs.
I mean, you know, and especially that game seven, you know, where they couldn't hit none of them threes to,
I think that was coaching.
I mean, everybody.
There was two things involved with that game. One, that was
right.
Coaching right there. Because if you don't see the three-pointers going in, you got to change your offense. You got to change the way you're approaching the second half. These niggas still shooting threes, and they missed about 50 of them. They building mansions there in Houston with bricks.
Well, I mean, you figure with D'Antoni, what he would do is D'Antoni is a straight-up offensive guy. His thing is he's going to outscore you. And D'Antoni, that's what been his hallmark, you know, of course, having his career as an Italian point, you know, playing in the Italian league, you know, when he was a younger man. In Europe, you know, this is the same shit that happened in the 2004 Olympics with Larry Brown being coached. There is no fucking way we should have lost the gold medal. We should have won the gold. But Larry wanted to play an offensive game, or he wanted to play a defensive game in a league, in a world arena where they play offense. And, I mean, that's how D'Antoni is. This thing is he outscored the other team. I mean, because D'Antoni had to make the adjustment because he's never been known as being a defensive coach. His thing is we're just gonna blow out the other team. But what do you do when the other team can score just as much as you can and you don't stop them?
That's where your defense mechanism come in. But
you gotta slow them down.
But there ain't nothing sadder than wasted potential because I hope it's not a scenario where he developed Nick Anderson syndrome. And for those who don't know who Nick Anderson is, Nick Anderson was one of the nicest shooting guards in the NBA around the mid-90s. He had
that 1994 finals against Houston when he missed some free throws. All he had to do was hit one, and it would have put him ahead.
This nigga misses four, and that just lost the whole series for Orlando. So,
well,
the comparison to Nick Anderson mindset could be on Melo slowly because you look at him right now. I mean, he's 34 years old. I mean, he's still young, but. Time is ticking, and he hasn't really built a winning formula around him.
You know, and it's crazy because with that situation, you know, there is a time where you have to understand, you know, the window is only going to be open for you so long before before it ends. I mean, you know, with Iverson, you know, and I'm a huge Iverson fan, but when you look at what happened with AI, you know, his last few years in the league, you know, all the bad habits that Allen had caught up with him in terms of, you know, he was always a player on the court. I mean, you put that nigga on the court, he was going to do it. But the thing was, in terms of his practice habits or lack thereof, you know, not always, you know, being receptive to what the coach's strategy was, it caught up with him because, and for all of our young athletes out there, you know, for all of our youngins coming up with this, you know, you may not necessarily agree with your coach, but listen to what your coach says. And if you do make it to the pros, yes, your reputation does follow you in terms of what type of player you are in reference to respecting authority. Because ultimately with Iverson, what happened was that he became a liability. He could have easily been, you know, a sixth man on a team that was already gunning for the championship. And you put him out there, you know, as a reserve, he would have helped put that team over. But he, you know, when he got traded, you know, his final destination when he ended up with the Grizzlies, his thing was, you know, I don't know no dude who's a former MVP that's coming off the bench. You know, I don't know no dude who's a leading scorer, you know, in NBA who's coming off the bench. My thing is, dude, you know, the game has changed for you, so you have to adjust to it. you know, and he couldn't do it. And ultimately, he never was able to get on a squad that was, like, really, really, really going to contend for a championship. You know, he was on the Pistons teams during those years when the Pistons were really competitive, but they were not enough. It wasn't – by then, it was like he was kind of halfway done.
So what's going on with Draymond Green and Kevin Durant?
Well, there was a little spat that happened Monday night where basically Draymond called him a bitch and said, "We don't need you. We've been winning without you."
Well, damn.
And well, it was just one of those games where things weren't necessarily clicking, and you know how Draymond is. You know, Draymond is one of those guys who he has a mouth on him. That's obvious. We know his history. You know, this is what he does. But, you know, and KD kept his calm, you know, where some niggas would have been on some street shit and be like, "Nigga, I will fuck you up and I don't care if you on my team." But, you know, shout out to KD for handling it like a professional, because that's just who he is. You know, he's not going to rock the boat. That was disrespectful as fuck what Draymond did, because that's, you know, and I don't condone that. You know, he's one of those guys that think by getting under your skin, he's going to get the best out of you. They asked Kevin about it in an interview last night, all the year getting blown out by, ironically, the Rockets, and a reporter asked him about that incident with Draymond, and Kevin basically said, "Don't ask me that question." So he's obviously, and rightfully so, still tight about that, because I know he feels he got pumped, you know, and that was not a respectful thing that Draymond did. You know, I fuck all that bullshit about, well, you got to be hard. No. You never, in the words of the late, great Charlie Murphy, you never habitually line step on somebody like that. You know, you don't give five fingers to the face of a man's ego and disrespect him like that. You know, and I give Kevin a lot of props. You know, that was me, and I've dealt with some bullshit.
Oh, I would have took his head off.
Niggas try to, yeah, you know. But my thing is, nigga, we not gonna fuck this up in terms of the game, but in the locker room, we gonna have an issue.
Oh, I'm gonna see you, Jack.
You
and
know,
I'm
but,
like, no, we gonna take this fade on All Star break, nigga. Cause you ain't trying to get hurt, and I ain't gonna get the blame.
Exactly. But
while we on the NBA, cause you know it's funny how this show just transitioned into the sporting column. But I gotta give out one more award. You know we do the bitch nigga segment.
Oh Lord!
I haven't given this out yet. Hold on, let me play that clip right quick. Cause you know we're gonna get started with this one. I was gonna mention it 2 weeks ago, but you know how it is when we're moving on time strain. You gotta get everything you can on one show. So I'm gonna go ahead. We're gonna start the bitch ass nigga segment right here.
Yucca.
And who I'm gonna give it to is Scottie Pippen.
Oh boy.
Yeah. For those who don't know, Scottie Pippen and his wife just got divorced. Pippen ended up trying to beg her back, giving her a $4 million ring. And never mind the fact that this chick was messing around on Scottie. Scottie trying to beg her back. She ain't coming back. She wanted divorce. She went ahead and divorced him. So now you can find Mrs. Pippen out there at the parties, at the clubs. If you look at her on IG, she thotting it up right now. She going to have that Cash App up next, my nigga. She's community property now. And this goes to what I was saying before about guys like him, because Michael Jordan even called this out. He said, "Pippen's from a small-ass town. He don't know nothing." He said he don't know anything about how the game works and how the world works, and that's why he was able to pretty much get taking advantage of. See, when you got guys like him come from these small territories, the average access to
attract the women is slim. The finest thing out there is a 5.5 at best. So you finally sign up to the league, you go to the NBA, and you all of a sudden, you're just wide open. There's gorgeous women of every race around you. You don't know what to do. You want to wife up the first fine thing you see. And you see the track record with all of them. You ain't never seen no exotic chick. And as you know, she's not really that cute, but in comparison to Scotty, that's like a supermodel to him. So he's looking at it like, man, I got to wipe this mug up. I ain't never seen somebody this fine before. Not in where I was growing up. Going up in Central Arkansas, I never seen nobody this fine before. So now I'm traveling with Michael Jordan. I'm traveling with the Bulls. There's fine motherfuckers everywhere. So I'm wiping this mug up. She ain't getting away. And all she looking at is the meal ticket. She's like, okay, I ain't got to respect this buster. But at the same time, he can finance my lifestyle. And when this nigga retire, I'm gonna really show him. And interesting enough, he retires, and 20 years later, she's messing with Future. And that goes to show you guys that just because you got your paper right doesn't mean you're exempt from getting cheated on. Having your paper right ain't gonna keep her happy. He lost his woman to a nigga that ain't even half his worth. Scotty's a six-time NBA champion. Future is the face of trap rap. An NBA nigga versus a trap rapper. And you would think that the women will roll with the NBA player because of stature. No, 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 no.
It's about the swag.
The swag. I bet MJ tried to tell him. Like, you know how MJ talk. Gotta keep your head in the game, Scotty. You don't know what's going on, Scotty. And you kind of knew Pippen was soft anyway. Go ahead, judge it back to that old clip with Charles Oakley yoked him up by his collar. I don't know if anybody remember that. But if you really look at it, when Pippen was a rookie, you see Charles Oakley yanking Scotty up. Even though it was playful, it just looked like damn, you let another man just yoke you up like that. So wifey most likely saw all them soft characteristics come to life, and Pippen being the type of guy that he was, he thought his clock was going to keep her happy. It don't work like that, bruh. It don't work like that.
Well, you know, the thing is that you always got to keep your game face going no matter the situation. And the reality of it is that, you know, you really have to know what's going on with those type of things. You know, and for a lot of those guys, you know, dealing with the wrong woman is not only limited to Scotty, but it's limited to it involves a lot of activity.
How shit
be happening.
And, you know, it happens
to everybody.
That's
just what it is.
It happens to the best of us, but it's the way he's carrying it out is making him look like a sucker, because why are you trying to ask for her? Why are you trying to take her back? She cheated on you, man. You got the leverage.
Exactly. And buying her something like that, I mean, this isn't a Kobe situation where Kobe cheated and he knew that, you know, that bag was going to get cut heavy. You know, so he knew he had
he took
to make like that situation. Water that $5 million pink diamond. No, it was $4 million. It was a $4 million pink diamond. He bought her that. I was like, man, this dude is, like, he not playing games. He is not trying to. Because they said that she was going to, you know, his wife during that time was going to leave him. Like, she was going to leave.
And, interesting enough, Larissa Pippen married Scotty in the midst of him being in his heyday. Like, it was his 1997 when him and MJ was winning those rings. The timing was perfect, wasn't it?
Timing was
perfect.
You know, but he, you know, It's you got to know what's going on around you. And, you know, Scotty, you know, one of the all-time great NBA players, definitely 50 greatest, you know, for this generation. You know, they're going to have another 50 for the next generation, but he made the first 50 for the first great, for the first 50 greatest. But, you know, a lot of times in relationship, you know, but it shows that, you know, male or female, we are fallible. Nobody is invincible or impervious, you know, or impervious to damage in terms of what who we deal with. And you have to know who you are in relationships with.
And she messing with Scotty's soul right now. Because I looked at something on Esquire where she said she busts out a skin-tight black dress during dinner date with Kourtney Kardashian. Oh, she's fighting it up right now.
Man, Future and Joe Moses did that song Back on Brady.
I can't wipe no dot.
I think somebody.
That's my song of the moment
out.
Right there. Oh,
what's
my
that?
God. She's showing out now. And yet, she's an old thotty, though, because she has about four kids. Nothing worse than a past your prime thotty. That is the saddest thing in the world. Oh,
well,
she's showing out,
hey.
Too. I'm trying to find
well,
more
I mean,
photos.
I mean, look, she living her life. I mean, look, just
oh, yeah.
like Jill Scott,
she
you know,
her
showed
life.
Her just like Jill Scott showed her mouth game is like, boy, that was that like
not
the...
Hey, everybody
Ooh.
Hitting up on the DM, me included. I was in there too.
Oh Lord.
Cause I was like my curiosity
yeah.
antenna came up.
We're like, really, Jill?
I'll take Jill Scott over Pippen's wife. Cause at least that's some prime that's prime head game
Ooh.
Right there versus Pippen's game.
Man.
Pippen's wife is watched.
Look, I'm like, look, you see Jill work that microphone. You're like, yeah, she's
yeah.
getting a mic check any day. You know she can't, look, you
mic
know she can't
one,
stroke
two,
and
one,
work
two.
That.
Mic check 212.
I'm like, look, you know she can't work it like that without a situation where she knows something. So, yeah, I was like, man, oh, man. But, boy, that was, yeah, it was definitely a wild week in terms of what we've seen in entertainment and sports.
Yeah. Yeah, if you really look at Larissa's Pippa, you see her going all out with it, you know, showcasing that thought appeal. Like, you don't sit down and raise your damn grandkids. Nobody trying to see no 45-year-old fight, okay? She got more kids than a starting NBA 5, and she want to be out there in the streets with a Kardashian.
Oh, man, that, oh, God, that's hilarious. That is hilarious.
Now, if Scotty was really smart, he'll have to flex that muscle. Like, okay, if she's trying to come out with a book deal or she's trying to come out with a TV show, he need to cancel that. Like, look, you ain't going to eat off my name, just like 50 did with 50 bought the rights of his baby mama.
He bought, say what?
Yeah, he bought her whole life. Meaning that she can't make no money off of them. Meaning she can't do no TV shows, no books. He trademarked everything. That's a
Man.
Petty nigga.
Well, you then again, look who it is.
Exactly. So, yeah, I'm going to leave it at that. We had to give Scottie Pippen the bitch-ass nigga award. For this segment here, and we're about to sign this thing out. I want to thank everybody for tuning in for these past week. We've been having four straight Dynamite shows that we knocked out. We had Lola Loke, we had Badass Spider Loke, and now we had Freeway Ricky Ross, who chopped it up with us a bit. I'm going to have the replays of all those shows up throughout the weekend. And we're also going to have possibly on Sunday, we might have the Survivor Series special. Ilar the Sandman may be coming back for that one. I'm going to reach to him, and we're going to see where we're going to make that happen.
So we're going to see what's going on with that. And I'll let y'all know when the time and the place on that Sunday we're going to do. But this is us signing out. My man T-Max with the facts, holding it down. Big shout out to you. Big shout out to Miss Chinchilla. Big shout out to Elada Sandman, who may be joining us Sunday for the Survivor Series special, as I said before. And this is King Eric the Great signing out.
Yeah.
And much love to y'all. Peace.
We're out. Peace.